Blog Talk Radio.
So, hello everyone. My name is Mary Dolan, and I'm with an organization called Inclusion Zone, and I'm very happy here to be with the Kiwanians of Bethesda, Maryland. Woo! And we are at the Knights of Columbus in Bethesda, which is a great find here. They've got one of the longest bars around that I've seen in a real long time. And I am very fortunate to be associated with the Kiwanis Club of Bethesda. You all have made possible the work of Inclusion Zone for the past few years. And just briefly to remind you all, Inclusion Zone was started out of the frustration of parents for seeing parent after parent going through the same trauma, problems, issues when trying to get their children with disabilities into schools, into community life, and into a bright future. And when I started a support group, I would have new people coming every month, but it didn't matter because the stories were always the same. And so I said, this needs a little bit of a bigger platform, started podcasting in order to the idea of let's not keep reinventing the wheel. So in addition to podcasting, Inclusion Zone's also beginning to do some program development. There is no lack of issues facing families and children with disabilities in our region and in our country. DC, which is where I live, has its special issues, but they are not unlike Montgomery County or Arlington. So you all have helped make possible our work, my work, which is the work of the community in giving hope and inspiration to families that they're not alone, giving them resources, and hopefully moving forward to actually delivering some programs because there are so many gaps in what is needed and what is not yet provided. Trust me, I've been one of those parents where I couldn't believe I was in this situation of this is not provided for my son, or I have to fight this hard for my son. So I've changed as a result of that, and I appreciate so very much your backing of that work that we've been doing. Along my journey, I have had the good fortune of meeting a colleague of Amanda Garzon. And Amanda's colleague is a mom also. And long story short, I met her. Her friend is Melissa McCall. And I met Melissa because her child was in a school that I was teaching at. And her child was abused. And I was moved into a classroom because I reported on an abuse that I saw occur in another classroom. So we were both misfits, placed into a classroom that we didn't really belong in. Me as an assistant teacher and little Abigail as a pre-K placed into a kindergarten classroom with much and first graders. And but somehow Melissa and I found each other. And then I learned about the Hydrocephalus Association, which Amanda is the co-chair of for the DC area. I'll let her not botch up her own title, but and I had the good fortune of participating in the Hydrocephalus Walk a couple of months ago. So when you talk about people who know how to turn people out, this is one of those types of people. You know, this is a kind of a person who can get people to, on a Saturday morning, or was it a Sunday? Maybe it's Saturday. Yeah, when I just wanted to hang out with my kids, but I went out and I walked and for a couple hours in the heat, and I had to talk to people I didn't know. And it was great. And I loved it. And it was one of those things I said, oh, see, you didn't want to do it, but you did it and you loved it. But this is the kind of person who makes you do those things. So I'd like to introduce my newest friend, Amanda Garzon. And I'd love for you to introduce yourself to these wonderful folks who are all heart and a lot of to tell them about you, the organization, and what's your secrets.
So thank you, Mary. When Mary asked me to come speak, I said, well, let's do this informally so that we can really enjoy our time together. And I can also give you all the information that you really want or you find valuable from my experiences, but also so that I can learn from everybody in the room, because I always approach everything as a dual learning situation. And I think that having an open mind and an open heart like that really allows relationships to cultivate in ways that you would never expect. And it could be 5 years from now, or it could be next month, where you see a really wonderful benefit occur from those relationships. So my name is Amanda Garzon. I'm the Director of Communications and Marketing at the Hydrocephalus Association. The Hydrocephalus Association is a national patient advocacy organization for individuals living with hydrocephalus. It was established in 1983 by three moms and one dad whose children were diagnosed with hydrocephalus at a time when there wasn't the internet and there wasn't cell phones and there was no information for families on the medical condition. The condition has been around since the beginning of time. And what hydrocephalus is an abnormal accumulation of fluid in the brain. There is no treatment besides brain surgery to release the fluid from the brain, and there is no cure. And the typical treatment for hydrocephalus is the implantation of a medical device called a shunt, which is put into the brain, so a hole is drilled into these main the main areas that accumulate fluid in the brain that we all have, and then the fluid is taken down into another part of the body to be absorbed. And this is actually the tubing that is inside of a patient's body that is draining the fluid. It has the highest failure rate of any medical device on the market. So usually for children with hydrocephalus, the device tends to fail within 2 years of being implanted and the child is going in for a repeat brain surgery. For some kids, that time span can be less. For others, it can be a little bit longer. It actually has the same failure rate in the adult population. Adults are a little more resilient, and we're still trying to, there is no registry tracking the number of people who actually have hydrocephalus and how many revisions and treatments they have to have. So we are actually trying to address that issue as an association. But we do know that there are approximately 1 million people in the United States living with hydrocephalus. You can be born with it. You can develop it from a brain injury. So anybody can get hydrocephalus at any time. Congresswoman Giffords got hydrocephalus after he was shot in the head. We have veterans who were returning from Afghanistan and Iraq who developed hydrocephalus after IED explosions. We have football players, NFL players, who developed it after repeated head trauma. And one of the most common reasons for children to develop hydrocephalus is a journey that Melissa and I shared together, which was that our daughters were born incredibly prematurely. And my daughter was born at 28 weeks, so I was 7 months into my pregnancy. She weighed 2 pounds when she was born, and she had a brain hemorrhage. And that is the most common reason for hydrocephalus in children. There's another form of hydrocephalus where there's an estimate that 700,000 individuals over the age of 60 are actually afflicted by hydrocephalus, and only about 20% of them are being properly diagnosed. And that is called normal pressure hydrocephalus. It looks just like Alzheimer's or Parkinson's. And it usually presents with a triad of symptoms: memory challenges, urinary challenges, and a gait, a very specific shuffle that develops. And when a person who has hydrocephalus is diagnosed with normal pressure hydrocephalus is treated, their symptoms actually tend to reverse. So as opposed to children and adults who've lived with hydrocephalus their whole lives, who live with a number of challenges that ripple effect off of the repeated brain trauma, individuals who've had healthy brains their whole lives and develop hydrocephalus as they're aging, when they receive treatment, they actually see a reversal of all their symptoms. So it's a very interesting condition, because for me, I have to do marketing for hydrocephalus and raise awareness, and I have two very different populations that I have to try and raise awareness for, but under one big umbrella. So that's a little bit. My daughter is 16. She goes to Walter Johnson High School. I saw your YMCA pin, members of the YMCA. We've lived going to YMCA summer camp. She has had 15 brain surgeries, and we consider ourselves very lucky that she's only had 15. My coworker has had 108 brain surgeries. It's not uncommon for particularly for children to have more brain surgeries than birthdays when they're younger, and then eventually they hit their teen years and you hopefully catch up. But one of my best friends is, you'll see my phone light up a little bit because her son, who is my daughter's age, is in the hospital for his 35th brain surgery right now. So it is a, you never know when you're going to have brain surgery, when your shunt is going to fail. So it is a really unpredictable condition. It leads to a lot of depression and anxiety in adults. And that is on top of the learning challenges that children face, some of the comorbidities. Autism, we have a 40% autism comorbidity, cerebral palsy, seizures, so there, and spina bifida. 90% of people with spina bifida have hydrocephalus. Only about 10% of people with hydrocephalus have spina bifida. So we're a big part of the spina bifida community, and they're a small part of our world in terms of the overall population. So for children with hydrocephalus, it presents a lot of learning challenges. So we're advocating constantly for our kids. We're in the IEP meetings. We're educating parents about that, as well as physical challenges and fitting in socially. This is really challenging. You know, Gabby was never invited to a birthday party growing up, ever. So it's there's a lot that the condition brings to the life of a family that really alters it. So my other role outside of my day job, which is about 10 hours a day, minimum, is, and this is how Melissa and I know each other so well, Mitch is Mary's friend. I lead the walk. I co-chair the walk with Melissa, and that is a walk that we use to raise awareness and funds for the Hydrocephalus Association. We have 48 walks around the country right now. I think this year we have 48 walks around the country. They're 100% volunteer-led, and my walk last year raised $86,000 for the association, which was a first, and Melissa and I have taken that walk from a $40,000 walk and doubled it. And so that was really exciting. Melissa and I love the walk because it, for us, it's a chance to celebrate our community. Mm-hmm. And we all get together and we have like spirit contests and t-shirt contests. Mm-hmm. And we just, you know, my Girl Scout troop volunteers and they run all the games and we just have a great time. And then the other thing that Melissa and I do together is we are the chairs of the community network, which is our support group for families. And so we host events tonight. We're hosting a mommy meetup at Pie Pizzeria down in Bethesda. And at the same time, our adult community is getting together at Red Hot and Blue in Gaithersburg with one of our adults who's like gonna be there and let people gather there. So we facilitate different meetings throughout the year, and it can be having an expert come and talk to us, like a neuropsychologist or a lawyer on setting up special needs trusts, or an educational consultant, to on the 25th of February, Melissa and I will be hosting an Education Day with Children's National, where a neurologist and a neurosurgeon will speak, a social worker, and we'll bring all of our families together so that they kind of have direct access to experts, not in a 20-minute meeting where you got to get out the door because, you know, they need to see the next patient, where we can just really be with our patients. So I wear a lot of hats for hydrocephalus, probably much to the chagrin of my daughter, who's forced to live it every second of the day. But it's, you know, I get to live my mission as a mom, which is to, we are the only organization, the largest private funder of hydrocephalus research in the country. We've only been able to fund $6 million since 2009, which is a drop in the bucket in the research ecosystem, but there was nothing being funded before. And NIH only funds about $6 million a year for the condition, which is under a dollar a patient when you look at it. And you compare that to other conditions that have a lower prevalence in the United States that are getting $250 a patient. So, you know, we're very underfunded condition and under-recognized condition. So I have I push this huge boulder up a mountain. Mm-hmm. Or somebody actually told me the other night, you push a little peanut up a mountain. That's like really hard to control a peanut, right? Because they're rolling all different directions and it's a long road when you're pushing a little peanut up the hill. So it's a really wonderful job. So Mary, I know I asked Mary to think of questions based on your interest levels and for anybody to ask me questions about the work that I do or what we've been able to accomplish. And, you know, it's been interesting listening, you know, about the baseball league and stuff. And of course, like my mind starts turning and I'm like, okay, well, you could do this and this and this. You know, so it's like, how do you bring attention to smaller organizations? You know, when I got to the Hydrocephalus Association, I had no budget. My budget last year was $1,000 for advertising. And so I have to do a lot on my own. So I know graphic design, I know desktop publishing, I know video editing. So I end up having to do a lot of the work myself. And so it's a, how do you make a difference on a shoestring budget, I think is something that does not get addressed mm-hmm. enough. And how do you really make impact? So, mm-hmm. you know, I know that that's an interesting topic.
Exactly. So, you know, wanted to, of course, open the floor to questions, but I know that I've been dragged kicking and screaming into the technology world. I still joke with my husband, oh, I wish I had my old DOS computer back in the day when I knew what F7 meant. And
remember reveal codes in WordPerfect?
Yeah,
oh,
yep,
my gosh.
Exactly.
I loved reveal codes.
Because once I learned that, then I knew what I was doing. But then I changed and had to change. And now I've got like the state of the art and I've grown to love my Mac. And then last night I was, oh, I hate this thing we bought and I didn't know how to use it and I was scared of it. And now I'm, and this thing is this microphone, which apparently is fabulous and it's supposed to make everything sound terrific. But I'm also supposed to be using Twitter and I'm supposed to also have a Facebook presence and I'm also supposed to be taking pictures and putting them on Instagram. And I need to respond to all, to my Facebook message pages and my emails. And oh my goodness. So can you discuss how does all of that get done when you do have such a lofty mission, you are one person, and you can't ignore those certain avenues of communication these days?
So
I'm gonna get a cookie.
I think that, yes, everybody needs a cookie for this conversation. It's a great question.
You want me to take it away?
Put them down here. Don't put them down here, actually. I don't want them down here.
Okay.
So for the first time, I actually am able to hire staff. One person. It's amazing. I just want to introduce Inez. Inez has been working with me since November. She's actually tweeting and Instagramming right now for us because I could do it while I'm sitting here talking to you, but that would be very rude. But, you know, we do tweet and Instagram our events and stuff. You know, when I first got to the association and I sat down and thought, okay, what do we really need to do to make a presence for ourselves? I looked at the tools that were currently being used by the association. So that was, I think, step number one is evaluate what you have that you're currently using. I mean, it could just be Google Mail. It could be Gmail. When I got in, there were three different email applications that they were using. I'm like, well, how are you keeping track of who's receiving emails and like collecting mm-hmm. email addresses? And so I closed that down very quickly and I brought it into one product. But it's, you know, what do we currently have? And then what do we want to do? So, you know, are we trying to build membership? Are we trying to build a digital footprint to the world? And again, like if it's going to be all of those, at what, where can I devote? Where do we want to devote most of the time? If you only have a mailing list of 10 people, then you want to start with a digital footprint because you want to drive people onto your mailing list. If you have a really healthy mailing list, then you need to do more balance because you need to keep the people engaged that you have engaged with the organization while you're focusing on creating that digital footprint. So then the next thing I did is I said, okay, what's our presence in the digital world? So we have a website. Our website was very old at the time. It was very outdated. We have a lot of information. We're like an encyclopedia on hydrocephalus. So how do we make the information accessible? I actually am not thrilled with our current website. I'll probably redesign it, but I think it's the nature of the beast in today's world, you know, being able to redesign every 3 or 4 years. So we had a website. We had a Facebook account. We did not have Twitter. We had Pinterest, I think, which I don't even to this day know Pinterest. I find other people to help me with Pinterest. And I said, okay, so what do we really need? Like, what are the big players in the field right now? What are other nonprofits doing? So I did two things. I went and spoke to a friend of mine who is in the digital marketing space at a large firm in DC. And I said, here's my situation, here's my budget, here's what we currently have in-house, what would you do? And he laughed for about 20 minutes. And then he started talking to me about what the trends were for large organizations when they were dealing with their clients. Like, what are the musts that they have to have? Then I went and just started Googling what other nonprofits are doing. So I would go to other nonprofits' websites and see, did they have a little Twitter icon on their homepage? Did they have Facebook? I would go look at their Facebook accounts, and I would look at their Twitter profiles, and I would see what kind of things that they were posting. And so then I made a plan for what we were going to do. So I chose the social media that I wanted to get on involved with. And I also chose that based on what my comfort level was with social media. I hate tweeting. You know, this is being podcast, so I like tweeting world, but I hate tweeting. It's really, first of all, you're like confined to 140 characters. So you spend like 20 minutes just trying to take like a, you know, something and crack it down into 120 characters or 140 characters. And, you know, and I was really excited when it looked like Twitter was dying. But then President Trump actually re-enlivened Twitter. It was actually going to die last year. And then it was kind of was re-enlivened, you know, is reinvigorated by President Trump because that's his preferred method of communicating. So now it's like, okay, back to Twitter again, which is So I looked at what I wanted to do, and I started accounts on all of those different channels. Then I branded everything so that there would always be a consistent look coming from my organization. So it wouldn't matter if you were on Twitter or if you were on Facebook or if you were on our website, you would know because it would feel like AJ. And I also started slowly doing that with all of our print materials because none of our print materials were branded. And again, you know, like we don't have a big budget. We still to this day don't have a big operating budget. And so it means like, I was just saw you looking, it means like stickers, right, on folders. Like right now, like I can't afford for my community network to go print folders. We have folders printed for some of our national endeavors, but, you know, we can't afford to do it and to localize them. So, you know, but it's making the sticker look as professional as possible. So once I set ourselves up and I just kind of did some basic branding, I then really looked and said, am I touching the people who I'm serving? Do they feel like they are have a space on the website? And what did that mean? So I am a person of color. I am Mexican American. I have a lot of friends that are people of color. Everybody on our website was white. And there were no people of color being represented on our site. And I had a very good friend of mine say to me, I don't see myself in the organization. And then I started realizing that there were just a lack of pictures in general. And when you're a parent and your child is first diagnosed with a condition, you're terrified about what the future holds. And you want to see a teenage child with hydrocephalus or an adult who's living with hydrocephalus. You want to see what that looks like. So I really started investing in faces of our condition and photography. And that could be me taking photography or asking people during their events to get photos taken and sending them to me. So I developed an asset library that I could then pull from to use as I was creating stuff at no cost, at no cost. These people had friends who were photographers who were volunteering to come and shoot their walk or shoot an event, you know, like a community network meeting like this. And I would say to them, hey, I need this kind of photo. I need like really great close-ups of faces, or I need, you know, I need somebody off center so that I can write text on the side of their photo when I do some promoting and stuff. And so I did all that for free. So it's like, it was finding ways to do everything for free. Social media is free. So I started the accounts. I designed the graphics that kind of centered everything. The next big thing though was redesigning the website. And we did have to pay for that. We had a board member who's had a connection with somebody who did website design. So we did get it at a discount. But we did have to redesign the website. But it was also, it was really about like looking at my community and saying, are we reflective of who our community is? Then I would say the next thing, which costs nothing, is to just listen to your community. Like, what does your community want to hear? One of the mistakes that a lot of organizations make when they get on social media, especially small organizations, is to just promote all the stuff that they do. But people don't want to hear somebody talk about themselves, especially on social media. They want to engage, and engagement is the name of the game on social media. And so then it's not only providing them consumables, right? So here's our resource on, you know, here's a video that with one of our neurosurgeons on driving in hydrocephalus. Here's, you know, so you have something that they can consume that's benefiting them, that they're getting something from. coupled, you know, alternated with an announcement that there's going to be a meeting on June 25th, you know, because you do need to promote the things your organization is doing. And then also coupled with, you know, then like the next day it might be asking them a question, you know, does sound bother you? If you're living with hydrocephalus, do you find yourself more noise sound sensitive? And then everybody starts commenting. So that's called creating a content calendar, a digital media content calendar. And then that's kind of looking at what you need to promote to your followers so that you can be promoting your own work and your own organization, as well as, you know, looking at, like, how can I do something fun for them? How can I give them something they need? You know, and so it allows you to put things in buckets. And once you create a content calendar, it makes actually managing social media really, really easy. Because, you know, every Monday you're going to, so for us, every Monday we post a support and education question and everybody answers it. And it's mm-hmm. so great. So the Monday mornings, everybody starts off talking about hydrocephalus and they're like listening to each other and they're commenting on each other's stuff. And then on Tuesday, we promote what's happening around the country with our community network. On Wednesday, we answer the question. Like, we asked you guys this question. Thank you so much for the feedback. It was incredible. We learned a lot. Here's a fact sheet on this topic, or here's a video that we've produced on this topic. So asking the question not only gives you an opportunity to respond and give them something that shows that you're giving them value as an organization, but it also allows you to learn about new ways that things might be impacted so that you might actually develop additional resources around something that you might not have thought about. So you also get benefit from people interacting with you. Thursday is our research day. Thursday is when we promote something about research. So this morning we announced we have an innovator award, and we just announced our awardees, the three scientists who received that award. Last week, though, it was a blog about genetic causes of hydrocephalus that our research director had written. So we alternate the types of research things that we do. And that people love to read about the latest research. It can be, you know, a new advancement in the field. It can be updating them on any of the research that we're funding. It can be, and doing the announcements about a grant or asking people to participate in a patient study. We do a lot of recruitment for hospitals. Now hospitals are coming to us and asking us to help them recruit for their studies because we've created such a big following on social media. And then Friday's Fun Friday. We just do fun stuff on Friday. Inspirational quotes. Quotes from our teens, our scholarship recipients. And so, you know, it's creating that content calendar that really helps you. So why is that helpful? Because there are tools out there that allow you to schedule social media. You know, yes, Inez and I spend a lot of time actively on social media. But on Monday, we schedule everything out for the whole week. So we don't have to worry about when things post because we know what time things are posting. And we use a tool because I was able to get it in the budget that allows me to post simultaneously on Facebook, LinkedIn, Google+, Twitter, and Facebook. That's very helpful. But there are free tools out there that do that too. Hootsuite, you can sign up for Hootsuite for free, and you can link up your Facebook account, your Instagram account, your Twitter account, and you can post. You can schedule out your posts. So the other thing that I quickly realized was that I was an army of one, and I am only one person. So scheduling certainly helps, right? Because then I don't have to sit on social media all the time, which who wants to do that? But I also then, I use interns a lot. Inez started as an intern, so I use interns all the time. I just had a high school intern from Churchill High School make our 2016 year in review video. Kids these days, like social media, they like come out of the womb punching like Facebook and stuff. And they can create graphics really easily and little videos with slideshows and stuff. It's incredible what they can do. It looks professional, and you can deploy it for nothing, right? Because they get student service learning hours for it. They want to do it. They get to see their name on a national platform. It's really exciting for them. But I also realized that I couldn't do everything. So in addition to the interns, I trained all of our volunteers around the country to help me. So I taught them how to pitch press stories so that they could get into local press. I taught them how to manage their own social media channels. So I run a couple Facebook pages. So we have three Facebook pages that we oversee nationally, but then we have 38 or 42 Facebook pages that I also have to maintain and oversee. So I teach those volunteers what they're allowed to post, how to schedule their posts. Then we also have 38 closed Facebook groups that I have to oversee. Again, I teach our volunteers how to do that. So I've created staff through volunteers who are taking on certain responsibilities, because I realized very quickly that if I wanted to amplify my reach, I had to ask other people to join me in the journey. And they were motivated because they're volunteers and they believe in the mission and the cause, so they did it. So I just, I brought some of my, just some of the stats just over the years of how we've grown. Because I think, I mean, I'm proud of the work we've done, and I also think it's interesting. So in 2013, we had 13,000 likes on our Facebook page, people who followed us, and we now have 29,054. So we've grown, we've done a nice job growing. We've grown about 20% every year. 1 year we had a 49% growth. Twitter, we had 2,000 people when I first started, and now we're at 4,600. So, you know, that's nice. But really, what's interesting is I think Twitter is going to pick up really substantially this year, again, because it's becoming a platform of choice again. And LinkedIn, we had 204 people on our LinkedIn company page, and we now have 614 people. So, you know, it's like slowly. We're not like huge, but we are absolutely making an impact. When I ran our social media, I ran a campaign on social media where everybody made signs. Like I made signs, and people could download them and print them. And it said, like, I'm a miracle baby, or I'm a $1 million baby, or I've had X number of brain surgeries, and they would fill it in. Or there are 1 million people living with hydrocephalus. I'm one of them. So I made all these really fun, empowering signs. People would print them out, and they would take pictures on social with their phone and put them up and tag us. We reached over 4 million people in that campaign. So even though my footprint is only 30,000, I'm reaching a bigger or even though my following is 40,000, I'm reaching a bigger audience on a daily basis. Yesterday we posted, we're doing Share the Love for Valentine's Day, and we posted cover photos and profile pictures so people could change their cover photos and profile pictures for Valentine's Day. And we have over 10,000 views, and we have a number of people now. So now as people are typing on our page, we're seeing everybody has the same profile picture, which has our website on it. So, you know, they're sharing the association with the world. So it's learning how to do things like that. And so that's some of the ways that I did stuff on a budget. Like I did a lot of the work myself, or I looked for teenagers. I created staff, and I really just made sure everything looked consistent across the board from the get-go so that people felt like they were always with us. I listened to what people were saying and who they were so that I could reflect that in what we were sharing out to the world. And that could mean not only just visually, but also like people needed information on something, so we would write a blog on it. People wanted to hear from a neurosurgeon, we did a series with a neurosurgeon. You know, so I listened a lot, and we started returning to them what they wanted to see. And I think it's hard for a nonprofit because I've worked in the for-profit and the nonprofit space. And in essence, these are customers who are consuming services. And it, nonprofits don't typically think of people that way, you know, like, and, but in essence, you are. Like, if you want people to come back to you, you need to give them a reason to come back to you. And so you do need to be delivering services that people want in order to keep them engaged. So that's just really a tip of the iceberg in terms of some of the stuff strategically that I look at with communications. There are other things if anybody's interested, but so I don't want to talk too much. I want to answer any questions that you might have, understand like also some of the goals that you have as a group and, or even in your own businesses. And
I took notes. This was good. And I'm a fast typist. Thanks to my mom wanted to make sure that her girls would always be hired and employed in life. So I learned how to be a typist at a very young age, so I'm very good.
That was the best class I ever took in high school. That is the one skill that I can absolutely say I still use to this day.
Totally, absolutely. Yeah, I can do off to the side so I can share that. But this is fantastic. So yeah. I'd love, and I know I'm like, oh gosh, that's right now. I need I'm learning from what you're saying, and it's the, okay, getting over the hump, the fear of okay, let's just going and doing it. But I know that these are some of the issues that you are all facing, and that's why when I learned about Amanda's availability, I was like, yes, come!
I have two questions.
Yep.
One related to, I think, there are two different ones. I'll do the photos that you mentioned.
Okay.
You say people want to see photos of teenagers and adults. Is that because they want to know that their child is going to get to the future?
They're scared.
So they can see.
I was, when Gabby was in the NICU, I looked for books on hydrocephalus or, you know, or even just kids surviving the NICU. I was so scared. And she didn't make it a couple of times. And I just needed hope. I needed to see hope. When I first got to the association, we were projecting a lot of images of the harder cases of hydrocephalus. And I, as a mom, was like, there are so many things to celebrate in our community, too. You know, we can't just project the hard stuff. And that could have been in articles or it could have been visually, whatever it was. But, you know, people need hope. And we, you know, all of our kids, hydrocephalus presents a very wide spectrum of abilities. But all of our kids are amazing in what they accomplish. But we weren't messaging to that positive. We were messaging to that negative. Like, it's the 25th brain surgery. You know, they failed school. They failed this year because of math. Or as opposed to, hey, they passed. Mm-hmm. You know, they're this amazing writer and they've excelled in English, you know, or, it was hard. Like, it was hard to change that vision. I was very fortunate that I had a board that also felt the same way. Everybody on our board is connected to the condition personally, except for one person. But he's connected now because he's been on our board for so long and he has a lot of friends. So, you know, they also felt the same way. Like, what message are we trying to send? How are we going to bring people to the association? And I realized that we were missing hope. And so I really focused on celebrating and hope. And so those were two things. So actually, and I brought this for you guys. I know you're podcasting, so I'll just speak to what I'm doing.
I'm sure.
And I wanted to move away from a traditional trifold when I got to the association. And I went to rack cards because our doctors and stuff would put these in their mm-hmm. offices. But you can see that I always put images now so that people can see people who are living with the condition. This is information on MPH if anybody wants it.
The other question I have, I don't know if you're going to answer or if Amanda's going to answer it.
You guys should ask me what it was like when she first came to work with me. That would be an interesting question.
So with Twitter, I didn't know it was dying too bad. It didn't go.
Back.
Because I cannot for the life of me understand how you kick off, how Twitter continues, because there's so much coming down. There's so many posts that I've seen, like during a game or something, you know. How do you get noticed? What could you possibly say in 140 words? And I mean, in a normal scenario, like you're at a corner, I mean, what would you say that anybody would take notice to as all these messages? And you're right, now that the president tweets, he tweets all day long. And everybody
or all night long.
And they're all retweeting the tweet. So we're in all the noise.
A lot has to do with hashtags. You know, mm-hmm. you create a hashtag that's catchy, you know, and people, right? Mm-hmm. People like it, so they can click on it and mm-hmm. see all the tweets that are happening with that hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing to do, you know, how to get people involved.
And do people understand what hashtags are? Because a lot of people don't. Right. And so hashtags are old-fashioned file cabinets. That's what they are. They're file cabinets on social media. So if you want to file something under the hydrocephalus folder, you always, whenever you're on Facebook or Twitter, you always use hashtag hydrocephalus. Because then Mary can go to Twitter, or she can go to social, she can go to Facebook, and she can search by hashtag hydrocephalus. And anything anybody's written about hydrocephalus will come up.
Sure.
Because they're all everybody's trained, especially these kids, to put the hashtag. So that's how you follow conversations. So they're filing cabinets.
So there's one hashtag, kids need Kiwanis, that we use.
Okay.
that now is out there for all the stuff about Kiwanis International.
So if I wanted to be engaged with that, I would know to go look for it.
A file. I'm so glad you said that, because I use the hashtags. I follow hashtags all the time at conferences and what have you. You know, when we're there, we put the hashtag, the conference name or whatever, so everything.
That's why. So everything can be organized.
Did not know that. That being said, so you're sitting in this meeting. What kind of hashtags would you put?
Well, we put a lot of HAs, the Hydrocephalus Association, hydrocephalus.
We always hashtag hydrocephalus.
Yeah.
If she was tweeting now, I will go and check her tweet. you know, we always will try and track hashtag hydrocephalus, but we have a couple of hashtags that we also use. So for this meeting, we probably wouldn't, there isn't a hashtag that we would do specifically for, like, you know, sharing to our, you know, partners or anything like that. But we would tag you so that it would show up in our feed and it would show up in your feed. If I knew that there was a hashtag you guys were using, like, I didn't, you know, I should have looked before I came. But now that I know, like, we would potentially use that hashtag if we were tweeting about this, like sharing, you know, at Kiwanis, and, you know, we're here sharing with at Kiwanis about how to help kids. And then I would do hashtag. What is it? Kids.
Kids need Kiwanis.
Kids need Kiwanis. And so that way I would not, that does two things though. That not only uses hashtags, it also, it tags you guys, so it shows up in your feed. So now all of your followers are having exposure to my organization because I'm tagging you.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of back scratching that happens in the social media world, and you have to understand how to take advantage of that in order to find new followers. So, you know, I get a lot of my volunteers to retweet a lot of stuff just personally because they have bigger followings than I have, right? So it's all about amplifying your voice. And then it's, so, you know, you follow other organizations that are like-minded to you. And then when something happens that affects both of you, you tag that other organization so that you're showing up in their feeds as well. And then if you also, like, share some of the things that they're doing, then there's that back scratching happens. They should be sharing some of the stuff that you do as well.
So tagging, you know, all these words were scary to me. I don't want anybody tagging me, following me,
right,
else. So, but now years later, you know, it's all the lingo. But still, with tagging, that means somebody has, because I get, well, Facebook, somebody tagged you in this.
Like a photo or something. Like that.
Yeah, or something like that. And so it does call you there. I mean, because you want to see what. So you would tag just like if you use hashtag. But so
hashtag is different from tagging.
Yeah.
I can explain the difference. So you would put a hashtag on a word within a tweet that a lot of people are following so that people can follow those conversations. Okay. Tagging would be, and I just can show it too, but if we started typing at Kiwanis, then the actual organization, any Facebook pages, for example, or if we were doing it on Twitter, any Twitter profiles that you guys were running, we would see that list. And then we'd be able to pick the one that was appropriate. So for you guys, it would be your Bethesda page. I did go to the Bethesda page. And we would tag it. And then it would show up in your feed and it would be in our feed.
And it's just a function of...
So I'm basically tagging your Facebook page, your account.
Is there a clip to do that? Is there an icon or...
No, we can show you. Inez, do you want to show?
Yeah.
You're on Twitter? Do they have... Is there a... there has to be a Twitter profile.
Search, right? Let me go to. All of these are showing up. So yours would be. What's that? So there, I tapped it.
So when you tag me, you just touch it and you go to the site.
You do the at sign.
Right. So when you're typing, so if you're typing your own tweet.
Okay.
So Amanda and Inez are having fun with the at Kiwanis, right? And then we would see it and we would touch it to select you guys at their monthly luncheon.
I see.
I got a question.
And then hashtag kids need Kiwanis.
Where does a dinosaur go to learn this?
You want to know the best place?
If you notice, what you've got, what she's got.
Yeah.
I have tweeted.
Yeah, there's no tweet
have,
on there.
I have emailed or whatever you damn called once. And then I said, why would I go through all this button pushing?
I wouldn't do it on that phone either.
And then,
yeah.
I am person to person.
Yeah.
I prefer to call you, talk to you.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't tweet. I don't hashtag. I don't nothing, which is detrimental because I've got a group that we've got to expand and we're having a very difficult time expanding. Okay. I'm a Quanian. But I've got another project, and that's the Miracle League, okay?
Mm-hmm.
I need children who are have special needs,
mm-hmm.
okay? And I imagine these are children that have special needs.
Yeah.
Okay. I want them to come out and play baseball, all right? That may sound frightening or may sound difficult, but I have yet to find a disability that a child cannot come and play baseball. None. All right? But I can't get out there, right?
You
haven't been able to reach.
I haven't been able to reach.
There's a large market both in the change of our social society. Adults that work in professional seniors that have retired and will not give up their trusty LG phone because it serves the purpose very well. And the children that we want to come out to that baseball field or out to another program that we create called Discovering Abilities that we work with at the promoting at the Y. And
it's a swim program.
Many of these other small programs that exist in our region, Montgomery County, all suffer the same fate. I'm becoming more and more rare. It's a marketing part of that. As a parent of a child and having other things like yourself on the plate, it's so many different steps to go through to where do you go to learn how to do this, not just to function, but to do it well that you'll capture that group back. So reaching those folks, those children that come out to give us a try for the first time, they come out, they hit the ball, they are supported very well, and before you know it, they're looking back at mom and dad and, you know, sit down, I got this, you know, I can make it to first base, and they make it to first base, and the smiles on their face, and baseball may not be their driving force of coming to their age and growing up. And showing everybody what they can do, it'll give them the opportunity to bridge off from what we've managed to offer them. One of the simplest things in the world is to play baseball. There's three rules. Yeah. Hit the ball and go home with a smile. So when our children leave, our players leave the field, they leave with a smile on the face that we had a good day. We've made friends. We've had a great following with volunteers at different levels of the middle school and high school students and baseball players, and they do that very well. But when they leave our field, we don't connect to them in a different way to get that hashtagging going. I get a hashtag from the office and speak every day, and I know the way that was their past president. She's a wonderful mom. She's done everything that you've done and have gone through. Many tours look at all the things we walk through our son Joseph and see that, you know, we need help. We all need to help each other. If we all help each other, we all prosper. And we have to, you know, we want to adapt to, you know, what's the best way to do that. I can talk to someone and you know, listen to what they're, you know, really looking for and what they're really comfortable with their child, because me and my fearless leader here, she was very protective of our son. And I met Dr. Leader and my other friend, Jeannie Smith, and before I knew that, Jessica was having a great time at the baseball field and got introduced to the Columbus Club, and she really
I tend to clamp on people. He can tell you that. Okay.
It's
I see a prospect.
No one is talking, so. But that personal connection is, yeah.
I think it's a little bit of both, and I'm going to sign off of here because we've just been recording the wisdom here of Amanda, so you can go back to it time and time again.
Can you mention this, Mary? It's a collaboration between the Kiwanis and the it's the YMCA program.
Excellent. And before we sign off, we want to make sure that we know about this fabulous program, which is a Kiwanis Club YMCA coordinated program with scholarships available for swimming. Ah, I love that. That's the best. Oh, water, best therapy. And if people are interested in the D.C. area in this, they should call the YMCA. They should call the YMCA of Bethesda, the one on Georgetown Road. And there's a woman named Emily Hutton, and I'm not going to give you all the info because it's too much to write down. So anyway, this has been Mary signing off now from the wonderful Knights of Columbus in Bethesda with the oh-so-inspiring Kiwanis Club. Thank you, Amanda. All right, over and out.
So I will answer your question in many different ways.